You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports
with Jim Daniels
on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day.
And now,
it's Jim Daniels.
The only bigger game day there is than Championship Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday. We're 2 weeks away from that one, but boy, do we have showdowns for you today in the sports world. Good morning. I'm Jim Daniels, and this is Speaking of Sports here every Sunday morning. This is when we do this and kind of push the box score aside, take a deeper look at some of these stories and individuals that are making news in the sports world. First, let's update our essentials. The Home Depot can help you with big savings on brand name appliances that you trust, like Samsung, Maytag, LG, Frigidaire, Whirlpool, and more. Saving on appliances has really never been easier with free delivery on appliance purchases over $396. Just pick out the latest models from the top brands that you like and let the Home Depot take care of the rest for you. Visit homedepot.com/appliances for details. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. All right, into the business of speaking of sports, and again, doesn't have anything to do with, well, I shouldn't say it doesn't have anything to do with the box score, because the box score against the Warriors, a lot of people believe, was the last straw for the Cleveland Cavaliers and their coach David Blatt. They pulled the trigger on David Blatt, and he exits. Tyronn Lue, the assistant, takes over, and not in an interim capacity either. Tyronn Lue is given a 3-year deal. Now, this isn't completely a big surprise. As a matter of fact, if you were with us maybe 30 minutes or so ago, we had Joel Cordes on. From Bleacher Report, he covers the NBA, and he'll be another one to tell you that Tyronn Lue is someone that players like. He's an up-and-comer. He played in the league. He's played with some great coaches, and there's definitely was going to be some interest in head coaching for this guy after the season's over. So I feel like Cleveland thinks that they're getting ahead of the curve here. They realize that David Blatt is not the answer. His European approach and his rapport back and forth, it never seemed like he and LeBron were a great mix, a nice mix. Seemed like, okay, we'll try and get this done. And, of course, they fall short last year. And, you know, look, it's the Warriors that you got to get by. Or maybe San Antonio. It's going to be one of those that you got to get by. And then he got blown out by Chicago last night. Now, listen, that's under Tyronn Lue. That's his debut. Is his team did not get pumped up for their new coach and go out there and put on a great performance. Instead, they stunk up the joint. 4 for 24 from three-point land. I don't want to get caught up in the numbers here, but the bottom line is they came out uninspired and put up a bad shooting night, a poor performance for their brand-new coach, a guy that, you know, that they liked. Kevin Love was calling this team out a couple of days ago, saying, and after the loss to the Warriors, saying this team needs to look in the mirror. Everybody needs to take a long look in the mirror, including our leader. And he was not talking about David Blatt. He was talking about LeBron James. A lot of people are saying, oh, he's calling LeBron James out. Well, you know, he was calling the whole team out is what he was doing. And he should be the one to call him out, because this is the X factor gone wrong. Because they went out of their way to go get Kevin Love and trade away a great future prospect in order to get him. They do get him. And, okay, he leaves the playoffs last year because of that odd injury, that, you know, shoulder, Kelly Olynyk, you know, yanking on his arm, whatever that was. And so he feels like unfinished business, and so he wants to come back. They want him back. They bring him back, and they still can't make it work. You know, once again, Kevin Love, 5 rebounds, is not what you want. You want 15 rebounds out of that guy. It's not so much about scoring. It's going to be about defense and about rebounds. Again, I say it a million times, my favorite quote from the NBA comes from a long time ago, and it's Charles Barkley, you can't win without the ball. Yeah, you got to rebound the ball offensively and defensively to win basketball games. But nonetheless, David Blatt is out, a first-place coach at 30-11, gone. There are a few head coaches around the league that think this is absolutely crazy. One of them is in Dallas, and another one is Stan Van Gundy in Detroit.
It's embarrassing for the league. It really is. That one, to me, elevated all of the coach firings totally into the theater of the absurd. He's 30-11. I mean, it's not like you're looking at him and saying, wow, they've got no chance to win the championship. I mean, they're at the top of the East. If it's championship or bust and you didn't like the fact that he didn't win it last year, why'd you give him 41 games this year? I mean, it doesn't look, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. But the bottom line is, his job is to win games. He did that. It's supposed to be a bottom line business, but it's not. So now you get fired for winning as much as you get fired for losing.
Stan Van Gundy, the top guy in Detroit, who's done a great job up there, turned them around. They're playing great ball. They look good. Saying that, you know, now you get fired for winning. He goes on to say, quote, "You can't even make a flimsy case that that guy wasn't meeting expectations. Obviously, you have something else going on." So obviously, there is something else going on there. It's a chemistry thing. Look, we never thought that LeBron and David Blatt were a good mix chemistry-wise. But nonetheless, the only thing more absurd would be, Walton did a good job. If we lose two in a row, we might have to dump Kerr and go back to Luke. love Stan Van Gundy, former analyst here at NBC Sports Radio Network. When we launched this thing about 3 years ago, he spent the first NBA season, not even really the first NBA season, because the Detroit Pistons picked him up and he had to leave before the season was over. But yeah, you know what? Neither one of the Van Gundy brothers are exactly bashful or quiet about their opinions. And they're letting everybody know how they feel about that. David Blatt's Cavaliers, best team to ever change coach midseason. It's not close. You have a few people that changed early on. You know, the Lakers way back in the day dumped Jack McKinney. Again, that was way, way long ago. If you want to talk about the Lakers getting rid of somebody, the one of note really is the one that called Magic a coach killer, Magic Johnson, when Paul Westhead was fired in 81-82. They were 7-4, but, you know, he didn't get along with Magic Johnson. Magic basically said, him or me. And everybody thought, oh, great, coach killer is what we've got on our team. But then Pat Riley and Magic went out and won a title. Everything was fine after that. So, changes in the NBA. Championship Sunday. Plenty going on for you this morning. We're going to talk the business of sports here coming up in just a few minutes with our friend Rick Horro, who talks about the dollars and the deal-making in the sports world. We'll do that coming up next. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBC Sports Radio's mobile app. Hey, thanks for dialing up NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm your host, Jim Daniels, here every Sunday morning. That's when we do this. And we appreciate you being along for the ride. Coming up here in just a second, Rick Horro, the professor, will join us. I want to share with you very quickly before we go to the professor a little bit of our conversation with Chris Price with WEEI, talking to him about the big AFC Championship game. And, you know, aside from the game, what about the opportunity for the Patriots to be standing on the Super Bowl platform and be the recipients of the trophy and Roger Goodell being the one to have to hand that over? That could be a pretty sweet moment for the Patriots, don't you think, Chris?
I do think there is something to the idea that the Patriots would love nothing more than to be able to be the last team standing and to have Brady and Belichick up there on the podium and accepting the trophy from Roger Goodell. I think would make for the most awkward post-Super Bowl trophy presentation since Al Davis and Pete Rozelle all those years ago.
Chris, let me ask this additional question to that. If that happens, if it is the Patriots in the Super Bowl, what are the odds that Roger Goodell finds someone else to hand that trophy out? About 90%?
Yeah, that wouldn't be a surprise, quite frankly, the way he's avoided New England. You know, in all seriousness, too, and we've debated this up here on our radio show, whether Roger Goodell is ever able to show his face in New England ever again.
Ever.
I think it's a really – because – and there's going to be big games here in New England over – you know, you would assume anyway that there is going to be big games here in New England over the next couple of years. And, you know, is that – fervor, is that passion ever going to get to a point where he can show his face at Gillette Stadium at least publicly ever again? I don't know if that's ever going to be the case.
That's Chris Price with WEEI there in Boston. The professor joins us now, Rick Horro, to talk about that. Look, I know this is a tough putt for you, but that's why I put it in here. I know that you're friends with the Crafts, and you've watched your fair share of games from the owner's box, but I also know that you're friends with the commissioner, Roger Goodell. This is going to be a potential really tricky moment for the commissioner should that happen, isn't it?
Well, my first instinct, and I know I got to weigh it, and we're still 3 weeks away from that, is that this is a billion-dollar, meaning $12 to $25 billion corporation, and each owner is a 1/32nd partner, and that was last year. Sure, it's hard to get over. Just doesn't sound right in New England because they're set for revenge, but Roger Goodell's the boss. They'll find a way to deal with this issue. Roger Goodell will celebrate history, and the Patriots will be in the rarefied air of doing something that's never been done. The media will make a big deal out of this. I think the two parties at that moment in time will not. That's my prediction, knowing both of them.
You know, I think that there's an opportunity here, and I kind of made a joke with Chris a second ago. It is Super Bowl 50, and there is clearly an opportunity here where you could have some enormous NFL figure come out and hand out that trophy instead of the commissioner. I think he's going to take heat either way if that's what happens. I just got to figure Roger Goodell is hoping for the Peyton Manning riding off into the sunset scenario to the end of this season, right?
Yeah, I suspect he's not thinking of it, honestly. You know, it's one of those issues where we can all speculate who that super-duper person is. I know that there's no let's put it this way, from some information I have, no former commissioner that is either with us anymore or will be going to the game. So it's not going to be that.
Nope.
And if it's going to be somebody that may be, above the fray, I can't imagine who that would be. Although it is a good point. Super Bowl 50 is going to be special for a whole lot of reasons. 2 weeks of activity, the Golden Celebration. I'm doing a Super Bowl special. I'll tell you about it next week, and it's on the NBC family of networks on television, so that'll be cool. So, you know, the bottom line of all of this is a special event, and I'm not sure that particular – that moment will be special regardless
oh, yeah.
of how it plays out.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a question of what we're going to predict on it.
A little bit to his defense, I don't want to become a Roger Goodell apologist here, but, you know, you are an attorney. You are living in his world. We do talk the business of sports and deals and that. Talk about – just for a second, what an absolute, almost impossible job Roger Goodell has. I mean, he's trying to keep so many people happy, starting with 32 different owners, then all the fan bases. And it's like anytime anything goes wrong with the league internally, like anything that is league controlled, and that includes officiating, people very quickly always want to turn to the boss and say, hey, this is your fault. Talk about what a tough job that is.
Well, I don't want to be an apologist, but when you talk to Paul Tagliabue, he would be the first to admit that the era of social media causes a lot more of a different PR strategy, to put it mildly. And so it's not only, you are correct, that it's going to be people giving Roger Goodell a piece of their mind, but they give him a piece of their mind a microsecond after it happens. And so, again, not an excuse, but when you think about the last 9 months of football, you know, the biggest issues right now, to tell you the truth, are the playoff format, is a catch. You know, most of those issues are relatively, well, they're certainly different. I don't think you could say they're less significant than Brady, Hardy, Rice. But when you take a look at how the NFL has moved, you know, you may not like the standards, but you got to say over the last 2 years, the standards are certainly clearer as to what happens if you violate off-field and on-field. And honestly, whether it's Roger Goodell or everybody else, everybody's to be commended on that.
Rick Hora is our guest. We talk the business of sports with Rick every week. Let's talk about one of our favorite guys, at least in the business of sports. That's Jordan Spieth, and he's fresh off the 2016 Hyundai Tournament of Champions, picking up right where he left off, but he's got a brand new big fat corporate sponsor, and this is a perfect fit, isn't it?
Big and fat. It's as big and fat a deal as the LeBron James Sprite deal. It's Coca-Cola. And the key to this one, by the way, is not just that he's going to be in that rarefied air of Coke Ambassadors International, but it's going to be all Olympic-related as well. He's one of Coke's six kind of brand ambassadors, the six-pack ambassadors leading up to the games. And remember, golf comes back to the Olympics for the first time since 1904. And so the last time a Coke golf sponsor existed was Bobby Jones. So that's all you need to know about Jordan Spieth. And by the way, there's a lot of money in it.
Yeah, we kind of figured that part of it. Let's switch to MLB, where the Nationals' Bryce Harper has recently signed a deal with New Era to become the American headwear company's brand ambassador. That's a pretty good ambassador, isn't it?
Pretty good ambassador, and it joins Buster Posey and Andrew McCutchen and Jacob deGrom. And you know, kudos to New Era, because they found a guy who happens to move the endorsement needle, but he's also genuinely interested in the bottom line of New Era. The guy says that he's been wearing caps since he was five or six, and he's wearing snapbacks and beanies, and he was wearing New Era or nothing else. Well, the only difference now, again, is they're paying big money to do it, so he guarantees he'll be wearing New Era or nothing else. But it's a good example of the endorsement world in sports not dying as long as you pick the right guy.
Let's go back to the NFL for a second, because we are on Championship Sunday. We'll know by the end of this day who our participants are going to be in the Super Bowl. But we still don't know exactly what the L.A. landscape is going to be. The Rams are approved. They're coming back to Los Angeles. They're playing in the Coliseum starting this year. But the Chargers, still a question mark. Do you have a feel in the business world as to what might happen with the Chargers? Seems like they'd be foolish not to take the deal that Stan Kroenke's offered. It looks pretty sweet.
Well, yeah, except there's a territorial relocation fee issue that people don't talk about. We don't know what the numbers is exactly. That's not something people focus on. And also, the Chargers may want to give the city one last chance to get the referendum done that says we're going to get you that public-private partnership stadium in San Diego. Because now everybody knows that if it doesn't happen this year, they're out, and everybody knows they're out. And I'm not sure whether the Spanos family has the appetite to wait, because we've had 15 years of promises that don't work,
right.
But they are holding the cards right now, and the Raiders are holding cards right after that. You know, the other issue is, Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, he immediately dismissed St. Louis. St. Louis immediately dismissed the NFL. But time has a way of healing some wounds. So, you know, if I'm the Raiders, I look at sharing Santa Clara. I look at San Antonio. I look at San Diego if the Chargers vacate. I look at Toronto. And I may even look at St. Louis, believe it or not.
Yeah, you know, that is one of the stories out here in L.A. this morning, that the Raiders would, quote, pounce on San Diego if the Chargers leave. I got to imagine there's enough Raider fans that go down there and fill up that stadium. And Philip Rivers said the other day, the thought of that makes him throw up in his mouth a little bit. But the idea of the Chargers, going to Los Angeles, look, how can you not, when you saw what happened to the Rams? They went from $1.4 billion to $2.9 in value in a week.
Well, yeah, and they're also spending a lot of money to do it. And, you know, Stan Kroenke is the guy who is the architect of this entire strategy. When he announced the real estate play 2 years ago, and he didn't need permission to do a real estate deal to do a stadium. He needs permission to move, but if the stadium had been his primary passion for the last year, it made things easier for everybody. People in Carson don't particularly like what he did, but they can't argue with his results. And, you know, the winners here are clearly the league, with all the leverage that is unfolding the way we thought it would the last couple of weeks, and the media. Because now everybody writes about stuff that, you know, we've all kind of known for the last few months, but we're writing it as if it's gospel.
Well, we'll see how this whole thing plays out. First, we'll play out our Super Bowl and see how that goes, and then the battle for the rest of L.A. Will play out, I'm sure, pretty soon. Rick Horro, thanks for joining us once again. It's always great to catch up with you and talk the business of sports. Thanks for being with us on NBC Sports Radio.
Can't wait for next week, as always, pal.
Can't wait. Can you tell us all about what you've got going on here in the NBC family next week, too? Excited about that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rick. Good stuff from the professor there. Yeah, you can follow him on Twitter. Rick's a great guy. I mean, he's an author as well. He's got a couple of great books. When the Game is on the Line is one of them that you can check out. Yeah, how about that? Raiders playing in the Chargers' old stadium. Oh my gosh, what a Charger fan say. I know what Charger fans think about that. Coming up next, going to share a great conversation we had with Gary Myers. Gary Myers has written a book that you may be interested in. We'll tell you about it next on NBC Sports Radio and NBC Sports Radio's mobile app.
You're listening to NBC Sports Radio Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports
with Jim Daniels
on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day.
And now,
it's Jim Daniels.
Good morning. Thanks for being with us. NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm your host, Jim Daniels, here every Sunday morning at this time, talking a little bit about stuff outside of the box score, outside of the numbers of the sports world. And that brings us to our next guest. This is really terrific stuff. As a matter of fact, Scott Seidenberg and I have been holding down the morning show here at NBC Sports Radio, waiting for PFT, Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, and his crew to start doing the morning show. And we had a chance to talk to, this was on Friday morning, Gary Myers. Gary Myers has written the book, Brady versus Manning, The Untold story of the rivalry that transformed the NFL. Great stuff, great timing, and he joins us now to talk about what we've got in the book. Good morning, Gary. Thanks for being with us on NBC Sports Radio.
No problem, and good morning, and thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, I see all kinds of stuff in the book. I mean, we could probably do, I think, the rest of the show with you on what I see here. But one of the things that I saw in here that jumped out right at me is, despite all the success together that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have, these guys are not boys in the sense that they don't go out with beer, don't go out and have beers and dinner together. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, listen, it's not unusual that coaches and players don't socialize. It's also very unusual that coaches and players are together for 15 years, you know, quarterbacks and coaches, who are all their reputations and their legacies are always tied together. So it's unusual they've been together for 15 years, and actually this is the 16th year together, and that they've been to 6 Super Bowls and won 4 of them. So, you know, their relationship, you figure, would be a little different than, you know, coaches and QBs who are only together 2-3 years. And then at some point, you think on a Tuesday night when they're on game plan night, they say, you know, the heck with this, 9 o'clock, let's go get a pizza and have a couple of beers, or let's just sit around and, you know, talk about, hey, this has been a pretty cool relationship. We've had a lot of success. None of that has ever happened. And it's more of a function of how Belichick is. And a lot of that has to do with he doesn't get himself emotionally wrapped up with his players, because he knows at some point, no matter who they are, that he's going to have to either trade them, and he trades a lot of guys 1 year early rather than 1 year late to try to maximize their value, or he's going to have to tell them, you know, I really think it's in your best interest to retire. So you see a lot of the Patriots, after they retire, go back, and Belichick, you know, gives them hugs and, you know, is very friendly to them. But while they're on this team, he keeps his distance because he doesn't want him to get himself emotionally wrapped up in them.
Gary, you've interviewed a ton of players, coaches, Hall of Famers, teammates, all that stuff when it comes to the Brady versus Manning historic rivalry. What's the most interesting nugget you've come across when it comes to maybe the relationship between Brady and Manning?
Well, I think what people don't know is, you know, their relationship goes way beyond, you know, you always see quarterbacks before a game, you know, chatting on the field, or, you know, they certainly meet up after a game on the field to shake hands. These guys genuinely are good friends. And it developed over a period of time to the point that they text each other all the time. And in the off season, they get together to play golf. A couple of years ago, when Tom and his wife Giselle had a house in Brentwood, which they has since sold to Dr. Dre, by the way, Peyton and his wife were in the LA area, and they texted, Peyton texted Tom to see if he was in town, and Tom immediately invited them over for dinner. So the four of them sat around at dinner at Tom's house for like 3-4 hours, which is pretty neat. You know, I've told people if I had my tape recorder at that dinner, I could have got another 2-3 chapters out of the book. And their fathers have really become good friends. You know, Tom Sr., still lives in the family house in Northern California in San Mateo. You know, Archie is still in the family house in the Garden District of New Orleans. And it's interesting that they have wound up becoming friendly enough that they text every Monday during the season. And that's been going on for the last 5-6 years. Wow. Where, you know, Tom Sr. is checking up on Peyton and Eli, and Archie's always asking how Tom is doing. But, you know, the funny thing about it is, They do consider each other pretty good friends now, but they've never met.
Oh, wow.
And,
isn't that crazy? They text all the time, and they talk every single Monday, and they've never met. You know, there's just so many nuggets in the book. I mean, honestly, we could go on and on. Gary Myers is with us this morning. He's written a great book, especially just in time for the Super Bowl season, Brady versus Manning, the untold story of the rivalry that transformed the NFL. And you go back to the beginning, too. I mean, you're talking about the Michigan years here, talking about when Brady was at U of M. And how you talked to Lloyd Carr about, you know, how can the greatest quarterback in the history of NFL, how is it that he struggled to even get on the field at Michigan?
Well, you know, you can take it back a couple years earlier, and this is one of my favorite stories in the book, is that as a freshman in high school, and he actually went to the same high school as Barry Bonds and a bunch of other notable athletes, as a freshman in high school, his team was 0-8, and did not score an offensive touchdown, yet you took as many snaps at quarterback that year as Tom Brady did. He couldn't get on the field as a freshman, even though they didn't score one touchdown and didn't win one game. And the only reason he played as a sophomore is because the kid who started the previous year quit the team. And then, you know, Tom is not highly recruited. He chooses Michigan over Cal, which is right in his backyard, and the University of Illinois. And he goes there and he gets redshirted as a freshman, and he's frustrated his sophomore year. He goes into Lloyd Carr's office and tells him he's going to transfer. And Carr said, listen, I think that'll be a huge mistake, but if that's what you want to do, I'm not going to stand in your way. I'll sign the transfer papers. You know, it's not like he barricaded the door and said, I'm not letting you leave. And he just said, just go home and sleep on it. And Tom came back the next day, sat at the same spot behind next to Carr's desk and leaned over his desk and said to him, I'm going to prove to you that I'm the best quarterback for this team. And he did, but it took another 2 years. He hardly played his next 2 years. And then in his fourth and fifth year in the program, he started every game. But Carr, you know, went out of his way to get Drew Henson into games because, if you remember, Henson at that point was a pretty good baseball prospect who had already signed with the Yankees. And Carr wanted to keep him in the football program, so he made sure to get him on the field, and it was at Tom's expense. So the Michigan years were very – this is a long answer for you – but the Michigan years were very frustrating for Tom, but it also, he also says – it's made him who he is today because he takes nothing for granted. And all these years he's played with a chip on his shoulder because of how he felt he was disrespected.
Absolutely. Talking to Gary Myers from the New York Daily News, who has written the book Brady versus Manning here, the NBC Sports Radio, Jim Daniels and Scott Seidenberg with you. Gary, one of the more interesting things that I find about this rivalry as it stands right now, you know, when it started, Tom Brady was sort of the game manager, you know, riding that strong defense with guys like, you know, Richard Seymour and Rodney Harrison, Vrabel, Brewski, all those guys. And Peyton Manning was the playmaker. He had the weapons. He had Dallas Clark and Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison. And now it's kind of the opposite where Brady is the playmaker. He's the guy who's lighting up the stats. But Manning has become the game manager, essentially, with his elite defense. Talk about how that this rivalry has kind of flipped roles.
Well, it's only a recent development that Peyton has become, what you, and I agree with you on that. He's counted on now just not to turn the ball over and to try to make a couple of throws. And as he did, he made a huge play last week on that 3rd and 12. But that's more of a function of his physical situation, where he's just not capable anymore of consistently making big plays. I mean, his body is broken down, you know, right before our eyes over the last year and a half. You have to remember, it was only 2 years ago. Think about it. It was only 2 years ago he threw 55 touchdown passes.
Yeah.
And now, if Brock Osweiler had played at a higher level, I'm convinced that Kubiak would not have put Peyton back in, even though Peyton was healthy. I think what happened to Drew Bledsoe when he was healthy and Belichick stuck with Brady – that was going to happen to Peyton in Denver this year, except that Osweiler, a level of play slipped, Peyton got healthy, and Kubiak put Peyton back in the third quarter, the final game of the season, and he helped them win that game and then stuck with them for the playoffs. But I there's no question in my mind. You know, Osweiler started off winning in Chicago and then overcoming a 14-point deficit to beat Brady and the Patriots. If you remember that Thanksgiving game, they won in overtime. If that had continued, I don't think Peyton would be playing now. And, you know, what they're trying to do in Denver is almost play around Peyton, you know, by establishing a strong running game, which really didn't get going last week until the fourth quarter, and then playing strong defense. And as far as Brady's concerned, you know, early on when he took over for Bledsoe, sure, that's how Belichick played it. And that was smart because he didn't even realize what he had in Brady at that point. But it didn't take that long, I don't think, for him to rely on Brady to become a playmaker. You know, the 0-1 season when they won their first Super Bowl, that's how it was. 0-2, they didn't make the playoffs. But then they won it back-to-back in 0-3 and 0-4. And by that point, you know, Brady had already become a great player that Belichick, you know, was counting on to be more than a game manager.
Boy, you really got to a lot of people in order to get the book together here. Tony Dungy, Lloyd Carr, Drew Bledsoe, It just goes on and on. Joe Montana, Bill Parcells, Jim Irsay, Bill Polian, Scott Pioli, Wes Welker, Antonio Pierce, Rex Ryan, and on and on and on. So many people. Brady versus Manning, the untold story, the rivalry that transformed the NFL. Gary, where is the best place for people to get their hands on the book?
Well, thank you for asking that question, and people can get it on Amazon, and that's the easiest way and the quickest way. But also any of the major, you know, bookstores in the local areas that, you know, people reside, it's available, and I appreciate anybody who picks it up, and I hope you enjoy it.
And they will, because there's lots of great things in here. Like I said, there are so many little bullet points that we wanted to touch on that people are going to know about, like Peyton Manning almost becoming a Jet. All kinds of fun stuff. Gary Myers, thanks for being with us this morning on NBC Sports Radio.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys, and have a great day.
Perfect for the Super Bowl season. Brady versus Manning, the untold story of the rivalry that transformed the NFL. It's speaking of sports, good morning. Thanks for being with us. We're brought to you by Grainger, serving you with the products you need to help your facility keep running. Call, click, or stop by today, Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Coming up next, Pete Fox and I will take a look at a couple of things, not the least of which is a vacated stadium and somebody waiting in the wings to jump in there. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. Love game day. And nothing better than Championship Sunday for your game day. Good morning, NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. This is Speaking of Sports, where we shove the box score and the numbers and the scores aside just a little bit and talk about the issues and the individuals making news in the sports world. Pete Fox in the Update Studio. Time for me to bring you in for a little Speaking of Sports this morning.
Hey there.
Yeah, hey now. We all know that David Blatt is out. We all know that Tyronn Lue is in. But did we all know that Tyronn Lue is suggesting that David Blatt should coach the All-Star game?
Yeah, I was wondering if that's the right call. Maybe he's saying, I don't want to do it. And I guess that would make sense that he shouldn't do it. But David Blatt's kind of earned that, right? Would that be uncomfortable for Blatt if that was the case?
Yeah, I would think it was. I mean, you know, LeBron wasn't paying attention to you when you were coaching him there. You think he's going to pay attention when you get to the All-Star game?
Wow.
Well, you know, he drew up this, I scratched that play. You don't want to go through that again. No, I think that it would be incredibly awkward for David Blatt, and I think it's pretty short-sighted to Ron Lue to say that. I don't want to hop on him too much here, but I mean, you know, focus on what you've got in front of you instead of worrying about David Blatt, although he didn't seem to be too worried about David Blatt, does he? Some of his comments, I guess things will be different. No, they won't be different. They'll be better.
Well, yeah, I thought that, you know, him suggesting that David Blatt coach the All-Star game is him still trying to play, you know, middle of the road and stay on Blatt's good side for whatever reason at this point. You know, he seems to have been stuck between a rock and a hard place there in Cleveland for a while, and I guess his instinct is just to be in that position still. He's still trying to get comfortable with being the head coach. And so, you know, suggesting David Blatt as the All-Star coach is probably just him trying to be a nice guy. Cause you know, by all accounts, he is a good guy. And you know, this probably a relatively uncomfortable position for him, at least for a few days, especially after a loss in his debut.
Stan Van Gundy is one of a number of coaches that thinks that this firing of David Blatt is ridiculous, calling it, quote, a theater of the absurd. What do you think about getting rid of David Blatt, a guy that's 30-11?
I didn't think it was absurd at all. I agreed with Joel Cordes, who said maybe the timing was a little off, but I also feel like there's no time like the present. If this is a team that is going to win a championship or at least contend, they needed to make some changes. Dan Gilbert hired David Blatt because he wanted to try something different. Mm-hmm. Dan Gilbert is the owner. He shouldn't be hiring the coach, especially before LeBron James was locked in. So I'm not saying that LeBron has to be the guy that's involved in the decision, but don't you think he should be consulted or at least be, you know, comfortable or a wink and a nod?
And for him to say that he wasn't included in the decision is ludicrous. It's ridiculous. Of course he was included in this decision. You wouldn't make a decision like that and not talk to him. I mean, why would you alienate your superstar? That's absurd, and him not being real about this. So that's unfortunate. What about this? Raiders moving to San Diego, quote, a very real possibility. Doesn't that have train wreck written all over it? I mean, really, I know that the stadium is there and they could do that. But I mean, you're talking about the city of San Diego that basically hates the Raiders.
I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. To me, it just feels, having lived in San Diego for about 9 years, it just feels really, really sad and unfortunate for that city to not have an NFL team. And if the Chargers are to leave, then it doesn't seem that it would be that strange for the Raiders to step in there. I mean, the Raiders are kind of like, hey, we're a team looking for a city.
Yeah, we'll nomads.
Go wherever we got a stadium to play.
Right.
And San Diego makes more sense than, say, Toronto or St. Louis. I think San Antonio makes sense for the Raiders. But
Jerry
so
Jones
San Diego.
Doesn't like that, though.
He doesn't. That's true.
No, good Jerry point. Jones doesn't want any competition right down
good
the road.
Point.
Even
good
the
point.
Raiders. Thanks, Pete. Always yeah, great to have you on this show. Thanks so much for your take. Appreciate that. Pete Fox, everybody. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Speaking of Sports. Thank you for listening. Coop is next on many of these NBC Sports radio stations.